Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
It's a question that keeps business leaders up at night. How do you go from thinking about change to actually making it happen?
How do I start? Where do I start? What is the use case? Where's the value?
From the AI revolution.
This is the most amazing time ever. And developments in AI are super, super quickly changing.
To the urgent need for sustainability and resilience.
The physical climate risk predicted in the climate models has arrived.
The way we do business is transforming fast, but we're here to help. I'm Chip Kleinexel, host of Resilient Edge, a new business vitality podcast paid and presented by Deloitte and produced by BBC Storyworks Commercial Productions. It's a guide to implementing and sustaining change at scale. Coming soon, everywhere you listen to podcasts.
You may have noticed recently, if you go and buy a bar of chocolate, it's either shrunk with shrinkflation or it's become significantly more expensive, and in many cases, it's both of those things. Do you wonder why? Well, that's what I went to try and find out in Ivory Coast. So thank you for downloading this edition of Assignment, which comes from Côte d'Ivoire. I hope you enjoy it.
You might be able to hear the scrape of the mud and the stones under this 4x4.
This leg of the journey in the west of Ivory Coast was 230 kilometres or so. Not too long, I hoped. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm John Murphy, on assignment in this French-speaking West African country.
Well, we're still going almost 8 hours after we set off. The road was quite good to start with, but now it's just absolutely terrible. So far, we have survived several near misses, getting stuck in the mud. We've seen plenty of trucks completely stuck. You can see why it might be pretty difficult to get the cocoa to the market from this area. And we're doing this in the dark now, because it's taken so long. Don't really fancy spending the night here, in this car. Ibrahim, oui? Just turn that off, will you? A sec, the music. It's a little bit muddy and messy, isn't it?
It's very messy. The road is muddy and there are a lot of potholes, a lot of big holes.
Yeah, they're more than just potholes. They're huge.
Very, very, extremely huge. And, you know, again, see lorries.
They're all stuck.
All stuck. And it seems impossible that they can get out of these holes.
Yeah. It's also very questionable whether we can get through.
Yeah, we shall.
We shall.
We will overcome.
Such hope. The driver's worried anyway.
We did eventually get through. It took 9.5 hours. This is the story of cocoa. It's a journey from a bean to its transformation into many people's favourite confectionery, chocolate. It's also a journey through the tropical southern half of Ivory Coast. Why? Well, because this country is the world's biggest producer of cocoa, up to 45% of the global supply. There's another reason too. In the last couple of years, the price of cocoa on the international market shot up from around $2,300 per ton in late 2022 to over $10,000 per ton this April. I wanted to know why, and more particularly where it comes from, and what impact it's having on the cocoa growers.
Mr. Murphy.
Murphy, morning.
Bonjour, good morning. Bonjour.
The first stop on this lengthy road trip is a village near Agboville, about an hour's drive north of the country's commercial capital, Abidjan.
Vous parlez anglais aussi?
Un peu. Ah. Speaking is small, no?
English small.
Yes.
That's okay.
Greeting Ibrahim, my Ivorian BBC colleague, and me is Ime Koi. He's president of the local cooperative, Sokar, which collects up the cocoa beans from the farmers around here.
Will we be able today to go and see cocoa farm?
Yes.
Do you have water? I have a water. J'ai de l'eau là.
Well, we're preparing to travel even further inland somewhere.
I think we're going on a couple of motorbikes because the roads are pretty poor around here and our big 4x4 can't make it through. With luck, we'll be travelling gently. Don't fancy falling off. It's a muddy old path. This is why we're taking motorbikes, but this is too muddy, so I've had to get off and walk. Because it slides about.
This is the real.
This is real Ivory Coast.
The real Ivory Coast.
And the real cocoa growing business.
There's no way a car can pass here.
No. I mean, look at it. It's 1 meter wide.
Yeah.
Sometimes less. It's a bit of a spit of rain starting. We are definitely in the tropics.
After 25 minutes hopping on and off, we reach our destination.
Look at
here we are.
We're living.
It's very poor. Very poor. C'est très pauvre. Wait, look, he's pulling a face. I can see two huts.
Bonjour,
one made out of old breeze block type things. Another seems to be made of mud, or at least covered in mud, with metal corrugated sheeting on top. And on the ground, there's a large strip of black plastic. And on top of that, I think, well, there's a whole lot of pile of white things. That's cocoa. It is cocoa, definitely.
Okay.
So this is where they've taken off the outside of the cocoa pod, the bean, and this is the innards of the bean, which is white, sort of little beans within it.
Let me show you, please.
Yeah, he's going to show me. So that's the sound of two young men sitting on wooden seats, getting through a pile of cocoa beans. They spike them with their big long knives, machetes, pull them towards them, cut them open, and scoop out the seeds that are inside, which are white in colour. But the actual cocoa pods are yellows and greens and oranges and reds, and it's quite a pile. Oh! Oui, ça sent un peu du cacao, oui. Eat. Oh, wow. Yeah. It's so sweet. This white, sort of slightly slimy stuff. One of the beans with the stone in the middle. Forgive me, everyone. Sorry, I'd spit it out.
Fermentation.
Fermentation comes next.
Perhaps 7 days. Now it's raining.
Okay. 26 pods make 1 kilogram's worth of the dried, now brown, fermented cocoa, I'm told. The price per kilo for farmers in Ivory Coast is fixed by the authorities to protect them from price fluctuations and help them plan. In response to the recent high international prices, it was increased by 50% in April to 1,500 CFR francs, the currency used in 8 West African countries. That's about $2.50. It's still not a lot of money.
Oh, gosh. Here's the trees right here. I can see with some green pods on them. So the cocoa trees are literally mixed in with other trees.
Mm-hmm. Plantain.
And coffee. So mixed in are coffee
c'est
trees.
Pas comme, ah, c'est Arabica.
Arabica. And look, it's that's a rubber. So he's saying, well, you mix it all up because of the climate. So the cocoa trees are shorter. And they get partly covered by the taller rubber trees, protected a bit. Shadowing trees, covering up the sun a bit. Because based on my research, you don't want the cocoa trees in full sun.
Imi says a couple of years ago they had 7 months of rain, followed by drought. Harvest suffered badly, part of the reason for the rise in the international price of cocoa. They're living and breathing climate change, he says, and many growers don't earn enough to replace their vulnerable, ageing trees.
And what he's explaining here is that, you know, as you can see, Murphy, as he calls me, these are all small family farms, very small, 2-3 hectares. They're not industrial processes at all. So this is what you've got to remember. It's very small scale, pretty poor, obviously, and they're producing all this cocoa.
But he's worried about the price for the planteurs, the growers.
Je vis ou je meurs.
Because it's a matter of life or death.
So imagine somebody in Europe just goes to the shop and buys a chocolate bar and eats it in their sitting room watching television. They don't think about all this. What's your message to them?
We don't have any problem with those sitting in their living room eating chocolate. We don't have any problem with them.
Because we're growing this for them.
Yeah, we grow this for them. And without them, we cannot produce it, okay? The problem is between us and the industrial. The big companies. They're making a lot of profit out of us. And they can see us suffering. They are the problem, yeah.
Well, we're walking along towards another producer, tiny little path, sometimes barely can see it. Well, definitely off the beaten track. There she is, she's burning something. There's smoke. We've got a bonfire here of freshly cut branches. Bonjour, madame.
I'm okay, if you want. Cacao.
Just saying that, you know,
cacao fatigue.
The cocoa work is hard. So I do my homework.
She does all the work by herself.
By herself, yeah.
And she's explaining that she's having to clear the branches away.
Yeah.
She's dressed in a sort of loose fitting dress, cloth, and a scarf on her hair. She's in bare feet. You can hear the bonfire, and it started raining as well. There we are. Nice tropical downpour. We've been given a banana leaf each, big, large banana leaf, to use as an umbrella.
Marie-Claude Alibé says she was born in 1962.
How long have you been a farmer here?
I'm a cultivatrice of cacao. It's been 32 years old.
Your husband died 16 years ago.
Cacao produce quickly.
But the land is now tired.
But the land is now, you know, is poor. So we put fertilizers with insecticides.
As Marie-Claude shows us around her small patch of land, bugs and disease are a regular refrain. Something called swollen shoot disease has been running rampant through some cocoa farms, killing the trees and affecting supply.
Fortunately, the rain is abating a little bit. Yeah, she's limping as she walks along. She's got very bow right legged. Looks like it's been injured. So, do you earn enough money from cocoa?
We don't gain a lot of money from cocoa. Sometimes it becomes zero because you have to pay some medicines.
And
even if you gain 1 million, all disappear.
Why do you grow cocoa if it pays so badly?
This is my life. This is my work. This is my work. And so I'm obliged to do it.
Up to 80% of farmers depend on cocoa for their income. And it's responsible for about 40% of the country's export earnings. We're moving further north and west on a good road, phew, and then on to Daloa, an important trading centre for cocoa. In a muddy, puddle-strewn side street, great expanses of rice are spread out to dry on large plastic sheets, right next to the SASH cooperative.
We've come into this big open warehouse with green walls, and there are different corners to it, and I can see there are signs. There's one which says Fair Trade Certified, actually in French, Cacao Certifié. There's another one which says Rainforest Alliance Certified, that means shouldn't be grown in the rainforest. And in a third corner, there's a sign which says basically ordinary cocoa, so not the certified stuff. It's fairly empty now because we're between two harvesting seasons. There are a few remnants of cocoa beans on the ground here. And then there are a few large bags of cocoa beans. Just a couple here. I think that's quite a few kilos worth.
The cooperative's accountant is Lucini Diaby, who tells me they provide fertilizers and training to the growers and transport their beans. They have about 3,000 farmers on their books, producing around 5,000 tons a year. The cooperative itself makes its money by selling on the dried beans to exporters for 1,580 francs per kilo, just 80 more than the farmers are supposed to get.
Yes, 80 francs is not enough. To be frank, it's not enough. It's been years that these 80 francs remain and still the same.
So they've had no inflationary increase?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ivory Coast is number one in the world for the production of cocoa. But what are the main issues for you? What are the main problems?
The challenge that we face, the first challenge is about the cocoa trees becoming old. That's the first challenge. But also there's another challenge, is like some middlemen are going to our growers, our cocoa growers, to propose more money, sometimes 2,000 CFA, to take the harvest, to take the cocoa beans. It's another fair competition in the sector.
You're talking about old trees, and we've been into the fields and we've seen some old trees. Whose fault is it that these trees are not being replaced?
For me, the first person whose fault is the grower himself, because he can see that his trees are becoming old. He does nothing to replace it. Our growers mostly are illiterate, so it's difficult for them to implement what we tell them. For example, look at the trees, the swollen shoot disease, for example.
Swollen shoot disease, yeah.
It attacks one part of the tree. And they were advised to cut the trees and replace it with plantain so that the soil gets more fertilizers and repair the place. But they're not doing that. So they believe that if they cut the trees, just the little production that is on the tree, it will be a loss to them. So they don't want to cut it.
Isn't the problem that for these farmers, they're very poor? And they need the money immediately.
Yeah, I can't say no, that's part of it, because they are living in the rural areas. They have a lot of children, they have a lot of charges, a lot of expenses. So it's part of that.
This cooperative has recently branched out into making its own chocolate to boost income. You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
It's a question that keeps business leaders up at night. How do you go from thinking about change to actually making it happen?
How do I start? Where do I start? What is the use case? Where is the value?
From the AI revolution...
This is the most amazing time ever, and developments in AI are super, super quickly changing.
To the urgent need for sustainability and resilience...
The physical climate risk predicted in the climate models has arrived.
The way we do business is transforming fast, but we're here to help. I'm Chip Kleinexel, host of Resilient Edge, a new business vitality podcast paid and presented by Deloitte and produced by BBC Storyworks Commercial Productions. It's a guide to implementing and sustaining change at scale. Coming soon, everywhere you listen to podcasts.
I'm John Murphy, on assignment in Ivory Coast.
Alors moi je suis Dr. Cadio Ayakan Christian de l'Université de San Pedro.
Dr. Christian Cadio is from the University of San Pedro, a city on the coast, which is also the world's busiest port for cocoa exports. She studied Côte d'Ivoire's cocoa industry. Like us, she's focused on small producers.
La Côte d'Ivoire veut transformer 100% de sa production.
Ivory Coast wants to transform 100% of its cocoa production to put an end to the export of the raw material. The government has come to realize that there's more value in processing cocoa beans into cocoa powder, cocoa paste, and even cocoa juice. But does the state really know what the challenges producers and the small cooperatives face to do this?
At the moment, the country exports up to 70% of its produce as dried beans.
There is a culture of cocoa in Ivory Coast, of cocoa growing, but is there a culture of chocolate?
No, there's no culture for chocolate here. We don't have the culture of eating it. We know about cocoa, but not about chocolate, which is a pity. There are some small chocolate production units, but they tend to have little contracts with pharmacies, universities and small shops, because Ivorians don't have this culture of consuming chocolate.
But it's very small scale.
Oui, oui, petit niveau.
Yes. Is this whole cocoa business in Ivory Coast, is it a sensitive subject?
Oui, c'est un sujet sensible.
Why? Pourquoi?
Parce que...
Because it's managed by people up there, at the top. They take the decisions. They set the direction. It's a very sensitive subject. We don't talk about cocoa in the streets or at home. In fact, it's kind of taboo.
When you say it's because it's the top men who are making decisions, is the implication of that is that they don't want to be questioned about what they're doing?
Peut-être. Peut-être.
Maybe. Is that as far as you'll go?
Oui.
There's a smile and a laugh. Yes, that's all I'm going to say.
Driving through towns and villages, you pass sheets of drying cocoa beans by the side of the road, and the occasional small remnant of forest. In the last few decades, the country's lost most of its rainforest cover, partly because of clearing by cocoa farmers. The European Union is now requiring places like Côte d'Ivoire, which export agricultural produce to the EU, to set up tracking and tracing systems with electronic cards and digital payments for farmers. It's supposed to prevent further deforestation and the use of child labour. It's meant to be up and running by the end of the year.
Je suis Abel Gallo. President de l'ONG ID Cocoa.
Abel Gallo is president of an NGO, ID Cocoa, which works on trying to make cocoa sustainable. He's not so confident the new EU-backed system will work.
When you talk about the tracking, I don't really believe in it, because there are some technical aspects. And does Ivory Coast have the skills or the abilities to figure out everything?
Who's making lots of money in this business?
Those get money are the exporters and the chocolateries, chocolate makers and the government.
Further down the chain, the main challenges facing growers, he says, are climate change, aging trees and disease. But he also claims that many cooperatives don't really work on behalf of growers and they don't pass on financial bonuses given for respecting the environment.
Unfortunately, these bonuses are used sometimes by the president of cooperative, and they use it to build their own houses, to build their own business.
To enrich themselves.
To enrich themselves, and doesn't benefit the cooperative or the farmers.
Without the bonuses, he says, cocoa growers don't have the money to replace their aging trees and face the challenges of climate change. Some seek opportunities further afield, across the border.
Bonsoir. Here we go. Oops. Go.
That's why we ended up on this terrible road, edging along the Liberian border. After a 9.5-hour muddy drive, we reached a place called Paja, a dozen kilometres from Liberia.
It's early morning. There's a woman carrying a bucket and a huge basin of clothes on her head, actually sort of double-decker basin, with a small child following her and rubbish strewn across the ground. Bonjour, madame.
Bonjour.
Oui, moi, je suis Koulibaly Noufou.
My first name is Nufu and last name is Koulibaly.
This Ivorian cocoa grower in his late 30s moved across the border to Liberia 15 years ago in search of new lands.
I have a lot of hectares. I have about 60 hectares.
60?
60 hectares. It's a lot.
C'est beaucoup, ça. It's a lot.
It's been long. I am in the business. It's been very long. And also I have some people working for me. And I'm one of the pioneers of this cocoa. Yeah, so all these people who came from here came out for me.
Is this land in the forest?
C'est forêt.
Yes, it's a dense, a tropical forest.
Does that mean that land is being cleared in the forest areas for cocoa plantation?
Oui.
Yes, indeed. Yes, a lot of people do that.
Beaucoup. Nous, il y avait pas, il y a un moment, il y avait pas route au Libéria.
There were no decent roads in Liberia, Nufu explains. So he used to sell his cocoa back here in Côte d'Ivoire. But this year, the price is better in Liberia. Just 100 francs a kilo more in his area. But he's heard that in other places it's selling for 2,000 or 3,000 francs per kilo, double the price set in Ivory Coast. It's that price difference, I'm told, that's encouraged some Ivorian farmers to smuggle their cocoa across the border, chasing a higher income.
Bonjour. Wow, first impression is the smell.
Yeah.
Smell of chocolate, eh?
Yeah.
Ibrahim and I are now in Abidjan, surrounded by chocolate bars made by Chocovi, one of Côte d'Ivoire's few chocolate makers, adding value to the cocoa. It's still small scale.
Oh, a bowl of chocolate has been brought out. C'est quoi là-dedans?
Ça, c'est nature.
Nature? Natural?
Cassava,
yeah.
Cassava couscous.
95% cocoa, this
yeah,
one.
Exactly.
Ibrahim has gone straight in there.
Yeah, straight, because it smells so good. I want to try it as quick as possible.
Chocovi was set up in 2021. As we munch away, we're waiting for the boss.
Bonjour. Désolé, excusez-moi.
Viviane Kwame swoops in, apologizing for being late, and dashes off to change into her neat, white, master chocolatier outfit, proud with little Ivorian flags, orange, white and green on her collar.
Oui, j'étais dans le domaine de l'esthétique et coiffure. Vous voyez, ça n'a rien à voir.
Wow. So, she's just explained to me that before becoming a master chocolatier and learning her trade, she was in beauty and hairdressing. And she had worked a long time to pay for her training.
Wow. J'ai perdu mes parents très jeunes.
Yeah, she's saying that she lost her mother when she was 17 years old.
And she never really knew her father.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. But her grandparents are cocoa producers. And the cocoa plantations saved her life. Because when she gets into the cocoa, she can see the purity and the calmness of plantation.
And the beautiful colors.
Yeah, like a yellow one, green one, and even purple. And that's what she's saying, that the cocoa work is not a work indeed for it. It's just a passion that she's living.
On a un peu la classe moyenne.
She explains that her customers are middle class and expatriates living in Ivory Coast. She also makes specialized gifts for companies. Her goal is for everyone to be able to eat chocolate, made in Côte d'Ivoire.
She's saying that running toward the brown gold, we committed a lot of mistakes.
Brown gold, brown as gold, it was known, yeah.
Yeah, and we made a lot of mistakes. But now we are working to improve things, including fair trade and preventing deforestation. So I think now we should be more positive and not being too much critical about it.
So, Ibrahim is being helped in putting on these covers over his shoes, and me too. Lovely. And of course, a nice little hair net as well. Before we go into the production area, we look lovely, like kings, with hair nets, because obviously the production area needs to be kept clean.
C'est bon? Okay.
Oh. The chocolate smell grows as you come in here. C'est ce qu'on sent.
Oui.
And here's chocolate pouring out of taps.
Là, on est en production.
Okay, this is the production of chocolate.
Dark chocolate, milk chocolate, white chocolate.
Dark milk and white, wow. Looks lovely. These paddles turning round and round and this tap of chocolate pouring down.
C'est l'arbre de vie.
Coco is the tree of life, she says. With her bright smile and optimistic outlook for her country's brown gold, Viviane Kouame is trying to forge a new way for Côte d'Ivoire's cocoa industry. But as we've heard, climate change, aging trees, deforestation, poor incomes and those challenging roads make it a tough journey.
Vous savez, j'aime deux choses.
You know, she's saying that she likes two things. The first thing is cocoa, and the second one is Côte d'Ivoire. So she says she's lucky that they're both in the same place.
Espace, le cacao, Côte d'Ivoire.
Assignment was produced and presented by me, John Murphy, with additional production help in Ivory Coast from Ibrahim Brou. It was mixed by Andy Fell. The editor of the series is Penny Murphy.
The most famous wrestler in Iranian history.
When Gholamreza Takhti entered, there was chaos.
Whose legend is surrounded by mystery.
Really? Takhti died? How come?
Immediately the rumors started.
Legend of Takhti.
Was Takhti actually trying to provoke the regime?
Part of amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service.
There's this massive landslide of myth, and somewhere in there is the truth.
Search for amazing sports stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.